Welcome to your personalized deep dive. Today, we're going to crack open Atomic Habits by James Clear to figure out how tiny changes can lead to remarkable results.
Okay.
I've got a story that perfectly illustrates this. Back in 2007, I had a bit of an accident. Picture this. Medically induced coma, temporary loss of smell, one eyeball doing its best impression of a goldfish.
Wow.
It was 8 months. Before I was even allowed to drive again.
Oh my goodness.
Recovering from that was all about those tiny steps forward, day after day, just like the Atomic Habits we're talking about. Now, before we get lost in the atoms, let me bring in our expert guide to help us unpack all of this. What exactly are Atomic Habits and why should we care?
Well, think of it like this. Atoms are the building blocks of everything, right? Yeah. Well, your habits are the building blocks of your life. They're the small decisions and actions you make each day that ultimately shape who you become.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this connects to my 2007 saga. It really was all about those little wins adding up over time. So tell me more about this compounding effect.
Well, it's fascinating, really. If you improve just 1% every day for a year, you'll end up 37 times better than you started. That's the power of compounding. And it works both ways. Bad habits compound just as powerfully.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's both motivating and slightly terrifying. So if I want to upgrade my life, where do I even begin?
Well, Clear outlines four laws of behavior change that are super actionable, he says. Make it obvious, make it attractive, make it easy, and make it satisfying. Each of these laws taps into a different aspect of how our brains work.
Sounds like a recipe for success. Let's break those down one by one.
Okay.
First up, make it obvious. It sounds straightforward enough, but I'm guessing there's more to it than meets the eye.
You're right. One of the key takeaways here is the power of visual cues. Our brains are wired to pay attention to what we see. Think about it. Have you ever noticed how just seeing a plate of cookies makes you want one, even if you weren't hungry before?
Oh, absolutely. Speaking of visual cues, tell me about that study in the Netherlands, the one with the electricity meters. That always sticks with me.
It's a classic example. Just by moving the electricity meters from the basement to the hallway, where people could see them every day, researchers found that people use less energy. The simple act of making their consumption obvious led to a change in behavior. And then there's the famous fly in the urinal experiment at Schiphol Airport.
Hold on. A fly in the urinal. I think I need to hear more about this one.
They put stickers of flies in the urinals, and it actually reduced spillage. It sounds funny, but it highlights how powerful a well-placed visual cue can be. It gave people a clear target, and their behavior shifted without them even consciously thinking about it.
Okay, that's both hilarious and strangely insightful. So what visual cues are that powerful? How can I use them to my advantage?
Well, think about your own environment. What visual cues are already shaping your habits, good or bad? If you want to drink more water, keep a full water bottle on your desk. If you want to read more, leave a book on your pillow. It's about making the cues for your desired habits, impossible to ignore.
I'm starting to see how this works. But what about those times when willpower just isn't enough?
That's where the second law comes in. Make it attractive. This is all about tapping into our social nature and our desire for belonging. We tend to adopt the habits of the people around us, especially those we admire.
Oh, so instead of relying solely on self-discipline, we can actually use our social circles to our advantage. That's a game changer. But wouldn't that be a bit manipulative?
It's not about manipulation. It's about strategically aligning yourself with people who support your goals. Imagine you want to start running, but none of your friends are runners. It's going to be an uphill battle, right?
Yeah.
But if you join a running club, suddenly you're surrounded by people who make running look fun and achievable.
So it's more about finding your tribe, your people who already embody the habits you want to cultivate. That makes so much sense. But what about those habits? That just feel like a chore, no matter how attractive you try to make them.
I know I should meditate, but honestly, it feels like pulling teeth. That's where make it easy comes into play. The easier a habit is to do, the more likely you are to stick with it. Humans are wired for efficiency, and our brains love the path of least resistance.
So if I want to make meditation a habit, I need to stop picturing hour-long silent retreats and start with something more manageable. But how do I actually make those less appealing tasks?
Easy. Well, think about it like this. Every habit has some friction associated with it, something that makes it harder to do. Your job is to identify and eliminate that friction.
Okay.
Want to eat healthier? Pre-chop your veggies so they're ready to grab. Want to work out in the mornings? Lay out your clothes the night before. It's all about removing those tiny obstacles that stand in your way.
Those are some great practical tips. But honestly, sometimes even removing all the friction isn't enough. There are just some habits that feel like a slog, even when they're easy.
That's where the final law comes in. Make it satisfying. We're more likely to repeat behaviors that feel good. And that's where the power of immediate rewards comes in. Remember that our brains are wired for instant gratification.
Okay, so how do we make those good habits feel good? Especially when the rewards are often delayed. It's like, I know saving money is good for me in the long run, but that instant gratification of buying something new is hard to resist.
One effective strategy is habit tracking. It provides visual evidence of your progress, which can be incredibly motivating. Think of it like leveling up in a video game. Each time you mark off a day on your habit tracker, you're giving yourself a little victory, that sense of accomplishment that keeps you going.
I love that analogy. It's like turning those good habits into a game you can win. And it makes sense. Who doesn't love seeing their progress, no matter how small?
Exactly. And by making those good habits satisfying, you're essentially training your brain to associate them with positive feelings, which makes you more likely to repeat them.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground here. We've talked about making habits obvious, attractive, easy, and satisfying. But is that all there is to it?
Well, there's another key point that often gets overlooked. The difference between goals and systems.
I'm intrigued. Tell me more about that. Okay, I'm all ears. What's the scoop on goals versus systems? I'm guessing it's not as simple as set a goal and go for it, right?
Right. It's easy to get caught up in those big, shiny goals. But what really matters are the systems you build. Think of it this way. Goals are the destination, but systems are the roadmap that gets you there.
I see. So it's less about achieving specific outcomes and more about building a framework for consistent progress.
Exactly. Winners and losers often have the same goals, you know. The difference is in the systems they create, the daily habits they cultivate, that actually determine who succeeds.
That makes so much sense. So instead of fixating on that end goal, we should focus on building a system that allows us to keep moving forward step by step.
Precisely. A system of atomic habits, those small changes consistently applied that compound over time. It's about enjoying the journey and constantly evolving, not just reaching a destination.
This is really shifting my perspective, so it sounds like it's more about becoming the type of person who consistently takes actions that align with our values and goals, rather than achieving a specific outcome.
You're getting it. It's about identity change, not just outcome change. Your habits shape your identity, and your identity shapes your habits. It's a feedback loop.
Okay, mind blown. So if I want to change my life, I need to start by changing my identity. The story I tell myself about who I am and what I'm capable of.
And the best way to change your identity is to change your habits each time you act. In accordance with your desired identity, you're casting a vote for that identity. You're telling yourself, this is who I am.
I love that. It's like building a new self, brick by brick, with each small habit.
Now let's take a peek under the hood. How do these habits actually work? CLEAR breaks down habit formation into four steps. Cue, craving, response, and reward. The cue triggers the habit. It could be a time of day, a location, or even an emotion.
So, like if I always reach for a cookie when I get home from work, the cue would be arriving home.
Precisely. Then comes the craving, in your case, the desire for a cookie. The response is the habit itself, eating the cookie, and the reward is the feeling of satisfaction you get, which reinforces the cycle.
It's amazing how these seemingly simple actions are driven by this intricate process in our brains. But here's the thing. The reward doesn't have to be something tangible, does it? Sometimes it's just a feeling of relief or accomplishment.
You're absolutely right. That's why it's so important to make our good habits satisfying. Even if the reward isn't immediate, we need to find ways to make them enjoyable so that our brains want to repeat them.
That makes sense. But what about bad habits? I feel like they often hijack this system. How do they fit into this four-step process?
Well, they operate the same way. Cues, cravings, responses, rewards. The problem is, those rewards are often intense and immediate. Yeah. Think about the rush you get from scrolling through social media. That instant gratification makes them hard to resist, even when you know they're not good for you in the long run.
So it's like, our brains are wired to prioritize those short-term rewards, even if they lend to long-term consequences.
Exactly. And that's where CLEAR's four laws of behavior change come in. By making our good habits obvious, attractive, easy, and satisfying, we can outsmart our brains and make those healthy choices, the path of least resistance.
I like the sound of that. It's like we're hacking our own biology to create the lives we want. But there's one thing I've always struggled with: procrastination. Any advice on how to overcome that?
One of the most effective strategies Clear recommends is the 2-minute rule. The idea is to make starting your habits incredibly easy. Instead of trying to write a whole chapter, commit to just writing one sentence. Instead of a full workout, just put on your workout clothes.
It sounds almost too simple, but I guess the idea is that by taking that first tiny step, you build momentum and make it easier to keep going.
Precisely. You're overcoming that initial inertia, tricking your brain into taking action by making it ridiculously easy to start.
This is brilliant. It's like that saying, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, but sometimes, even when I manage to start, it's hard to keep going, especially when things get tough.
That's where habit shaping comes in. It's a process of gradually increasing the difficulty or complexity of a habit over time. You start small and easy, then slowly ramp up the challenge as you get more comfortable.
So, if I want to start running, I might begin by just walking for a few minutes each day, then gradually increase the distance and intensity over time.
Exactly. It's like climbing a mountain. You wouldn't try to summit Everest. On your first day of hiking, you'd start with smaller hills and gradually work your way up.
That's a great analogy, and I love how this whole approach emphasizes making things manageable and enjoyable. It's not about forcing yourself to do things you hate. It's about finding ways to make the process sustainable.
And when you find habits that you genuinely enjoy and that align with your values and goals, that's when the magic really starts to happen.
Okay. We've talked about making habits obvious, attractive, and easy. But let's revisit that last law, making it satisfying. I'm really curious to learn more about the role of dopamine and reward in habit formation.
It's fascinating. Remember, dopamine is the neurotransmitter associated with pleasure and reward, and it plays a crucial role in the habit loop. When we experience a reward, our brains release dopamine, which strengthens the connection between the cue, the response, and the reward.
So, the more dopamine we release, the more likely we are to repeat the behavior.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important. To make our good habits satisfying, we need to find ways to trigger that dopamine release so that our brains associate those habits with pleasure. And that's where habit tracking comes in.
We touched on habit tracking earlier, but I'm eager to hear more about its benefits.
Think of it as a visual reminder of your progress, a way to celebrate your wins, no matter how small. It keeps you accountable and adds that element of satisfaction. That keeps you going.
It's like those gold stars we used to get in school. It makes those good habits feel like a game you can win.
Now, there's another interesting strategy Clear introduces, the habit contract. It's a verbal or written agreement where you state your commitment to a habit and the consequences for not following through.
So, it's like a legally binding agreement with yourself, but with social consequences for breaking it.
Exactly. And by making the consequences of breaking the contract immediate and tangible, you're increasing the motivation to stick to your habits. Clear shares a great example in the book. An entrepreneur named Brian Harris created a habit contract with his wife and trainer to lose weight. If he slipped up, he had to dress in formal attire every day for a whole quarter.
Wow. I can't imagine showing up to work in a suit and tie because I didn't want to track my calories. That's some serious motivation.
And that's the point. By raising the stakes, you're tapping into our natural aversion to loss and our desire for social approval. It's like leveraging those primal instincts to support our higher goals.
I love it.
Okay.
We've talked about the 4 laws, the importance of systems, and even some clever strategies like habit tracking and contracts. But I'm curious, is there anything else we should keep in mind when it comes to building lasting habits?
One crucial point that Clear brings up is the importance of aligning your habits with your unique strengths. He uses the example of Michael Phelps, the Olympic swimmer. Phelps is an incredible athlete, but he's also built for swimming. He has a unique physique that gives him a significant advantage in the pool, and he's been able to leverage those natural strengths to achieve extraordinary success.
So it's not just about working hard. It's about working smart. It's about finding the activities that you're naturally good at and that you enjoy, and then building habits that support those activities.
Exactly. And the same principle applies to habit formation. We all have unique strengths and weaknesses, and it's important to find habits that align with our natural abilities.
So if you're naturally organized and detail-oriented, you might find it easier to stick to habits that involve planning and tracking. But if you're more spontaneous and creative, you might find those same habits restrictive, and frustrating.
Precisely. The key is to experiment with different habits and find the ones that feel good to you, the ones that fit your personality and your lifestyle.
And once you find those habits, that's when you can tap into your full potential and achieve extraordinary results. This is all so fascinating.
Now, here's a thought-provoking question that Clear poses in the book. Are you becoming the type of person you want to become?
Ooh, that's a good one. It really gets to the heart of it, doesn't it?
Mm.
It's not just about checking things off a to-do list. It's about aligning our actions with our values and becoming the best version of ourselves.
And that's the ultimate goal of Atomic Habits. It's not just about changing our behaviors. It's about changing our beliefs about ourselves and creating a life that we're truly proud of.
Well said. This deep dive into Atomic Habits has been incredible to give me a whole new understanding of how habits work and how I can use them to create positive change in my life.
I'm thrilled to hear that. Remember, it's all about those small, consistent actions that compound over time. And by understanding the science of habit formation and applying Clear's four laws of behavior change, you can achieve remarkable results.
This has been a truly fascinating exploration of Atomic Habits. We've covered so much ground today, from the four laws of behavior change to the power of habit tracking and the importance of finding your unique strengths. But there's one more crucial aspect of habit formation we should explore: the role of mindset.
Absolutely. Our mindset, the way we think about ourselves and the world around us, plays a huge role in shaping our habits. If we believe we're capable of change, we're more likely to put in the effort to build new habits and break old ones.
It's not just about the actions we take. It's about the beliefs that drive those actions.
Exactly. And one of the most powerful ways to shift our mindset is to focus on our identity, the story we tell ourselves about who we are and what we're capable of.
I love that. It's about aligning our habits with our desired identity, becoming the type of person who naturally embodies those habits.
And that's where the true magic of Atomic Habits comes in. It's not just about achieving specific outcomes. It's about transforming our self-image and creating a life that reflects our deepest values and aspirations.
Now, before we wrap up this deep dive into Atomic Habits, I want to touch on one more important point that Clear makes: the importance of understanding the role of dopamine in habit formation. Okay, let's talk dopamine. That's like the brain's reward system, right? I'm guessing it plays a big part in why some habits stick and others don't.
Absolutely. Dopamine is that feel-good chemical that gets released when we experience something pleasurable, and it's a key player in the habit loop. Every time we engage in a habit and receive a reward, our brains get a little hit of dopamine, which strengthens the connection between the cue, the response, and the reward.
So basically, the more dopamine we release, the more likely we are to repeat that behavior.
That's exactly it, and that's why it's so crucial. To make those good habits feel good, we need to find ways to trigger that dopamine release so our brains start associating those healthy choices with pleasure.
But here's the thing that always gets me. Our brains seem to be wired for instant gratification. It's like, I know saving money is good for me in the long run, but that immediate satisfaction of buying something new is hard to resist. How do we reconcile those two things?
It's a constant battle, isn't it? Clear talks about the difference between immediate and delayed rewards, and he's right. Our brains are wired to prioritize those immediate rewards, even if they're not in our best interests. Long term, think about junk food. It's loaded with sugar, salt, and fat, all those things that trigger a massive dopamine release, making it super addictive.
So how do we overcome that urge for instant gratification and make those healthier, more beneficial habits, more appealing? It's like, I know I should eat my vegetables, but that chocolate cake is calling my name.
One strategy Clear recommends is temptation bundling. It's a clever way to link an activity you want to do with an activity you need to do. For example, you might only allow yourself to watch your favorite TV show while you're on the treadmill, or you could listen to your favorite podcast only when you're doing chores.
So it's like bribing yourself to do things you need to do by pairing them with something you actually enjoy.
I love that. It's like turning those mundane tasks into something more rewarding.
Exactly. And by making those less desirable activities more enjoyable, you're increasing your chances of sticking with them. It's a win-win.
Okay, we covered a lot of ground here. We've talked about the four laws, the power of systems, habit tracking, contracts, dopamine, even temptation bundling. But there's one thing I'm still curious about. How do we stay motivated when those inevitable slumps hit There are just some days when I feel completely zapped of willpower.
That's so relatable. We all have those days. Clear talks about the difference between professionals and amateurs. Professionals stick to their schedules. Amateurs let life get in the way.
So it's about showing up consistently, even when you don't feel like it.
Precisely. Professionals understand that consistency is key. They show up and do the work, even if it's just a little bit, even when they'd rather stay in bed. And that's what builds momentum and leads to long-term success. It's like that saying, motivation gets you started, but habit keeps you going.
I love that. It's so true. The more you show up, even when you don't feel like it, the easier it becomes. You create a positive feedback loop where your actions actually fuel your motivation.
This is such a powerful reminder. It's not about waiting for motivation to strike. It's about taking action and letting that action create the motivation. But I'm curious, is there a way to know if our habits are actually working? How do we measure our progress and make sure we're on the right track?
Clear recommends taking time for reflection and review. He suggests a yearly review where you ask yourself, what went well this year? What didn't go so well? And what did I learn?
Those are such great questions. They force you to really examine your progress and identify areas for improvement.
It's like taking inventory of your habits and making sure they're still serving you.
Exactly. And by reflecting on your habits, you can fine-tune your approach and ensure that your actions are aligned with your values and goals. Remember, it's not about setting a habit in stone and blindly following it forever. It's about being mindful, adapting, and making sure your habits are still working for you. This is such a valuable reminder. It's so easy to get caught up in the daily grind and lose sight of the bigger picture. But by stepping back and reflecting, we can ensure that our habits are leading us toward the life we want.
And that's what Atomic Habits is all about. It's not just about checking off boxes or achieving arbitrary goals. It's about creating a life that is both successful and meaningful.
So what's one big takeaway you hope our listener walks away with today?
I think the most important thing to remember is that even the smallest changes, when applied consistently, can lead to extraordinary results. It's not about perfection. It's about progress. It's about showing up each day and taking those small steps that, over time, transform your life.
This has been such a fascinating exploration of atomic habits. We've delved deep into the science of habit formation, uncovered practical strategies for building lasting habits, and even discovered how to use our brain's own reward system to our advantage. But I think the biggest takeaway is this: change is possible, one small habit at a time.
Absolutely. And remember, it's not just about self-improvement. It's about creating a ripple effect that extends beyond ourselves and makes the world a better place.
So as you go out into the world today, remember the power of atomic habits. Choose one small habit you want to build or break and start today. Because even the tiniest actions, when repeated consistently, can create a ripple effect. That changes your life and the world around you.
Yeah. It